From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. Are You Afraid of the Dark? By Charles L. Grant. The storm began moving just below the horizon, setting houses and trees in sharp silhouette. Freezing the clouds in gray and roiling white, it buried the sunset and drove off the stars and replaced the moon's shadow with strobic shadows of its own. Yet it was harmless out there, far enough away to make people smile, glance at their watches, and walk only a bit faster. There was no warning in the forecast, and its own warning was muttered, softened by the spring air just an hour ago, filled with sun and new flowers and leaves brilliant green on the trees along the curbs. Then the breeze became a wind, and the storm turned around, a panther stalking the night with flashes of lightning where its claws touched the ground, grumblings of thunder when it spotted its prey. The breeze became a wind, and the temperatures dropped, and all that was left was the waiting for the rain. The padded deacon's bench had been turned around to face the picture window in the den. The floral draperies had been pulled back, the lights had been turned off, and the backyard was visible only between the blinks of an eye as the storm moved overhead and crashed down on the house. Lightning escaped the confines of black clouds, flaring, crackling, giving the trees angled movement, and turning the back hedge into a huge black wall. The ornamental wishing well, the bird bath, the tool shed in the corner, all of them curiously flat when the air burned blue-white ahead of the thunder. The leaves were silver, the grass pale gray, and the reflections in the pane were bloodless and transparent. "She's right," Jeremy Neal said, squirming on the bench but not wanting to leave. "Bernie's right. It's just a movie." "It is not. It's stupid. It's dark out. Can't you see that?" Stacy flinched at the next lightning bolt, but he still wasn't impressed. "It's dumb. I want to watch TV." "Bernie says we can't," Will reminded him. "She says we have to wait until something good comes on." "Her real name," said Stacy, "is Bernadette, and Bernadette is a real pain in the ass." Jeremy winced at the way his friend talked about their new babysitter, but he didn't say a word. Scolding Stacy Parsons was a waste of time. He knew that. He had heard his mother tell his father that 100 times, and heard them wonder how the boy's parents managed without strangling him. That part was a joke, at least. He thought it was a joke. Behind them, through the swinging door that led into the kitchen, they could hear Bernie working, making popcorn, fixing trays, getting glasses from the cupboard, and pouring them soda. "I feel stupid," Will confessed at last. Jeremy did too, but he wouldn't admit to it. He was in enough trouble already, and the one thing he didn't need was Bernie telling his folks that he was being difficult again. Yet it wasn't his fault. He liked to explore things, go places, find new games to play with his best friends in the whole world. Just because it sometimes got him into trouble with the neighbors or with people he didn't even know didn't mean he was bad. Like the window this afternoon at the toy shop. He didn't mean to break it, but Stacy had ducked when he tossed the rock at him. Not a throw, just a toss, and it must have hit the pane just right, because the next thing they knew, there was glass all over the pavement and lots of big people reaching for them so they wouldn't run away. It was an accident. His parents didn't believe him. And parents, Stacy had said once, never believed the kid when there was a grown-up around. You had to be big to be believed. You had to be able to defend yourself with something else besides tears. "I'm hungry," Will Young said, standing and walking away from the window. He turned on a lamp, blinking at the light. "Yeah," said Stacy. He stood, gestured, and he and Jeremy turned a bench around where it belonged. Then he closed the drapes and sat again. hands in his lap, feet swinging. "I wish you'd hurry up." "It's like prison," Will said, rubbing his hands together and grinning. "Bernie is the guard, see, and our parents are off to see the governor to find out when they're going to throw the switch."
"Where'd you hear that?" Jeremy asked.
"Saw it in a movie." Jeremy shook his head. "I saw that movie, and you got it wrong. They're supposed to find out if the governor is going to stop them from throwing the switch."
"Sure," Stacy said. "Did you see the look on my father's face when he found out what happened today?"
He shuddered. "I know that look.
He's going to be right there by the guy with the black mask. He's going to throw the switch himself."
Jeremy had to agree. He had never seen any of their parents so angry before, as if he and his buddies had deliberately set out to find trouble, or cause it when they couldn't find it, and lied about it when they did. Of course, they didn't always tell the truth, because then they'd really get clobbered. As it was, they were supposed to stay on their own property for a whole 2 weeks, and the only reason they were allowed together tonight was because his father had decided it was time the six grown-ups got together and decided what to do about taming their hellions. He didn't know exactly what hellions meant when he heard his father on the phone with Mr. Young the other night, but he did know it wasn't good, and he knew that this time they weren't going to be able to cry or beg or pout their way out of whatever punishment there was going to be. Staying home wasn't punishment. Staying home was only getting ready for whatever big stuff was coming after. Lightning and thunder. Ashes in the fireplace, shifting into piles. The wind rattling the pane and keening through the eaves. The boys jumped, smiled nervously, and jumped again when the kitchen door pushed open and Bernie came out with a tray in her hands. She walked to the card table in the middle of the room and put the tray in the center. There were three glasses filled with soda, a huge bowl of popcorn, and three chocolate candy bars. None of the boys moved. They only watched as the babysitter frowned at the closed drapes, at the turned-around bench, and at Will still standing by the floor lamp in the corner. Her short brown hair seemed darker tonight, her eyes deeper, her nose sharper, and when she brushed her hand down the side of her dress, she seemed less like a friend than the guard Will had described.
"I thought," she said, "you were going to watch the storm."
"That's dumb," Stacy told her.
"Yeah," Will agreed.
She turned to Jeremy then and waited for his answer. He shrugged. He didn't want to get her mad. Didn't want her to tell his mother and father he was being a pain again. Bernie was all right, and he wanted to keep her on his side. She had stayed with him twice before, and with Stacy and Will too, just after the big trouble started. And though she sometimes made him nervous the way she looked at him, the way she walked around the house without making a sound, he thought she was pretty okay for a grown-up.
"Sit," she said, and pointed at the bench.
They did, sensing something in her manner that forestalled rebellion. Besides, they could smell the butter on the popcorn, see the bubbles in the soda and the chocolate bars were the largest they had ever seen in their lives. "We're going to have a contest," she told them, standing behind the table with her hands folded at her waist. "It's going to be a lot of fun. The only thing is, you can't be afraid."
"Afraid?" Stacy said. "Who's afraid?"
Bernie smiled slowly. "Aren't you scared of the dark?" Stacy laughed. Will sneered. Jeremy pulled on his ear. She stared at them until Will giggled. "Stace is scared of the ocean," he said, taking a punch on the arm.
"Yeah, well, you're scared of the dark. You even still got a night light."
Jeremy kept silent. He was only scared of his parents.
"Good," she said. "That's fine, because the contest you see is a series of games that I pick for you to play."
"Big deal," said Will, poking Jeremy in the ribs.
"What is it? Spin the bottle?" Stacy said, laughing until he saw the look on her face.
"Thank you," she said. "Now pay attention, please. I want you to listen closely. Since you're not afraid of the dark, I'll pick something." She looked to the ceiling, looked around, and touched the table. "If you get scared, you lose."
"Jesus, Bernie," Stacy said. "We're not babies, you know."
"I know," she told him. "And that's what I told your parents. You're not babies anymore. You can take it. You're tough."
"Right," Stacy said.
Will nodded emphatically, and Jeremy said, "Take what?" Bernie ignored him.
"The rules are simple. I pick the games. Nobody quits before the end, and for every game you win, you get to keep a bar of this chocolate."
"That's not fair," Stacy complained.
Bernie smiled. "Second place gets popcorn."
"Hey," said Will, "and last place gets to sleep in the rain."
Jeremy looked at his friends, looked at Bernie, and decided that this wasn't going to be a good night after all. She looked at her watch. "We'd better get started. I promised your parents we'd be done before they return. Are you ready?" They each nodded, staring at the chocolate bars, each weighing 3 pounds. "In that case," she said, in the thunder and in the lightning, while the wind knocked on the door, "the first game is hide and seek." It was dark, so dark it was like living in a black cloud, and it was quiet except for the sound of his breathing. Will Young closed his mouth and his eyes and wished he wasn't so fat. His mother was always yelling at him for eating too much and for sneaking food into his bedroom after he was supposed to be asleep. But he didn't care. He enjoyed eating. It didn't matter what there was in the cupboards or in the refrigerator as long as it was good, and there wasn't much he didn't like. And he didn't think he was really gross and ugly fat, not like his father was with his belly showing even when his shirt was all buttoned. He just had a little extra here and there around his waist and his face, and that definitely didn't stop him from being able to run or climb or crawl under the porch. At least his arms didn't have all that flab hanging down, and at least his thighs didn't rub together because there was no room between them. Nevertheless, he wished now he was a little slimmer, because then he could squeeze a bit further back in the closet, maybe behind the golf bag that belonged to Jerry's father. He didn't think he'd have to stay here very long, because Stacy said it was a dumb game and didn't want to play and would probably deliberately get himself caught first. Jerry knew the house better than anyone, but Will thought he was scared of something and would probably head right for the cellar, the first place Bernie would look. The huge closet in the upstairs hall, then, was almost perfect when he found it. Clothes and coats hanging from the rails, boxes and stuff stacked on the floor, and the door so snug no light came underneath it. He reached out his hands and felt around him, trying to move things in front and move himself further back without making any noise. He breathed through his mouth. He froze whenever he heard footsteps passing outside, and he finally reached the corner after moving the golf bags aside. Perfect. Dark, but perfect. Bernie would have to declare him the winner of this game, no question about it. He grinned and rubbed his hands together. He pulled his knees up to his chest and listened to the muffled spill of thunder over the roof, and heard something move on the other side of the closet. He blinked and cocked his head, frowning as he listened as hard as he could, and wondering what it was, or maybe it was his imagination. A scratching, soft and slow. Maybe it's a rat, or a bat, or something that lives in the back of the closet and waits for dopes like him to play stupid baby games in the middle of a storm. A scratching, soft and slow, and something suddenly brushed quickly over his face. He almost yelled as he lashed out to knock it away, nearly yelled again when his fingers were caught, trapped in something that had round, hard teeth. His free hand grabbed for it while he pushed deeper into the corner, grabbed and yanked, and something fell over his face. He did yell then, but the sound was muffled, all sound deadened as his feet kicked out and struck the golf bag, as his head slammed against the wall, as his hands tore and pulled, and the thing dropped and tangled into his lap, and a coat hanger a moment later fell onto his chest. Shit, he thought, as he felt the jacket on his legs, the round buttons, the smooth lapels. Shit, you're a jerk. He shuddered and rolled his shoulders, wiped a hand over his eyes, and felt the perspiration slick on his face. He dried himself with the jacket and pulled the golf bag in front of him, proud that he'd fought the demons and hadn't been killed. Besides, this proved that he'd made a good choice. This proved he could be quiet. Bernie, he knew then, would never find him now. She might open the door, but even the light from the hall wouldn't reach him back here, and she sure wouldn't come in, not with that dress on. He giggled and quickly covered his mouth. He didn't know her very well, only the two other times he'd been over when she'd sat with Jeremy, but he knew she wouldn't want to dirty that dress. She was very careful about it. He could see that. He could see how she stayed away from the walls and held a skirt away from anything that might touch it and make it dirty. She was weird. Not even Jeremy could tell him he was wrong. Weird, and always looking at them as if they were bugs or something. Sometimes she was fun, like with a spooky story she'd tell them, but most of the time she just sat on the bench in the den and watched them, like a guard, like a dog, until Mr. and Mrs. Neal came home, and then she would put on her coat and leave without even saying good night. Weird, really weird, and a scratching in a corner. A laugh outside as Stacy ran down the hall, telling his two friends he was caught, but don't give up, Bernie was a jerk, and they'd share the chocolate later. Will smiled and nodded to himself. One down, one to go. All she had to do was find Jeremy, and the game was all his. All that candy, all his. His stomach growled. Something scratched lightly in the corner, and he'd wished there wasn't such a draft in here, tickling his neck and making him think there was something crawling through his hair. The wind outside had found a hole in the walls, had snuck around the window, and now he was getting cold, and the clothes were moving and rustling together, whispering to each and scratching. Are you afraid of the dark? A monster, he thought then, and squeezed his eyes closed, grateful for the colored lights that swirled in small circles and the curtains of faint orange that drifted down from the top, disappeared and came back. There was a monster in the closet. He shifted and heard someone walking the hall outside the door. Bernie, he called silently. Go find Jeremy. I'm not here. A monster in with him. But the candy bars were huge, and all he had to do was wait until his best friend was found. A coat hanger scraped on the metal pole overhead. Besides, there's no such thing as monsters. And I will not be afraid because I am hungry and I want that candy, he thought. His hands tight in fist, his eyes still closed. Something thumped against the golf bag and the clubs inside rattled. No such thing. No such thing. The bag quivered again and he felt a weight pressed against the sole of his sneaker. And he sighed his relief, grinned and shook his head. How stupid he could be. It had been his foot all the time. He had unthinkingly stretched the leg out and had kicked the bag with his foot. So there was nothing to worry about alone here in the dark. Scratching. Then he heard Jeremy running, probably from his bedroom, not the cellar after all, telling Will it was over, that he'd won the first game. He sighed again, loudly, and nodded. He knew he would win. How could they have thought otherwise? Wasn't he the champion hide-and-seeker in the whole school, if not the entire world? Couldn't he do something wrong and then hide from his parents until they were nearly frantic with fear, until he popped out and smiled and they forgot they were angry? Shit, he was the champ. Bernie should have known. A footstep by the door and a scratching inside. He grinned and shifted and took hold of the bag. Someone turned the lock, turned and locked and walked away. Hey, he said. Hey, Bernie, it's me. And he pushed the bag aside and saw the red eye staring at him. The candy bar sat in the middle of the table, and Stacy stood as close as he dared, one eye on Bernie fussing with the logs in the fireplace, the other on the reward he would win the next time. Had Jeremy been last, it would have been different because Jerry was okay, but Will was a P.I.G. hog, and he didn't think he could stand sitting there watching that pig scoff down all that chocolate. Bernie rose and dusted her hands on the apron she wore around her waist. Stacy decided he would win the next one and let Jerry have the last. At least that way Will the pig wouldn't hog it all and make them look stupid besides. Are you ready? She asked, standing on the hearth. Jeremy looked towards the stairs that led to the first floor. But we can't, he said. We gotta wait for Will. The hell with Will, Stacy said with a sneer. He's got his dumb candy. How's he just playing? We ought to let him stay where he is all night. That's not fair. If that's the way Will wants it, Bernie said softly, then that's the way he'll have it. If he's not back before we finish the next game, he'll forfeit his prize. Yeah, Stacy said. Way to go, Bernie. She smiled briefly, and he smiled back. She was really queer, but she had bigger tits even than his mother. And he didn't even think she knew that he'd been trying to look down her dress all night. He'd whispered that to Jerry while they were waiting for Will, and the dip had blushed. He really had blushed. Stacy figured the kid didn't know anything about women and wasn't surprised. His old man was the strictest parent in the world and wouldn't even let him look at photography magazines. That was dumb. That was really and truly dumb. So he said, when do we start?
Stace, oh, come on. They're going to be back soon. We got to get a move on.
Stacy's right, Bernie said. She reached into the apron pocket, then pulled out something wrapped in white cloth. Slowly she pulled the corners aside and he saw in her palm a massive red jewel. It caught the dim light and doubled it. Seemed to quiver when thunder rumbled through the room.
Wow, he said.
This, she said, was taken from a very rich man. He has the police looking for it. He's given them 1 hour to find it, or else, she smiled, without showing her teeth. We're going to play cops and robbers. Stacy knew he had made a mistake. He should have found some place inside to hide the jewel, but had convinced himself that Jerry would have found it in less than 10 minutes. After all, it was his house, and he knew all the good places where such a thing could be hidden. But this was silly. He stood on the patio, the wind tearing at his hair and lashing it in his face, making him squint, hunching his shoulders, making his arms tremble as he considered digging a hole in one of the potted plants and burying it there. No. Once Jerry knew he'd left the house, that would be the first place he'd look. And there wasn't time to dig a hole in the yard because the ground was still hard and he didn't have any tools. Dumb. Parsons, he told himself when the wind turned him around. Really and truly dumb. Then a streak of cloud-smothered lightning illuminated the backyard, and he grinned so hard his cheeks began to ache. The well! That stupid plaster well Mrs. Neal had bought last summer. They were forbidden to go near it, to touch, even to breathe on it, which didn't bother him because he thought it was stupid. What good was a well when it didn't go anywhere? All Mr. Neal had done was take it out of the station wagon with Jerry and his help and carried it to the yard, plunked it down, and got himself a beer to celebrate. Mrs. Neal had applauded like they'd moved to the stupid damn Empire State Building, and after that she and Jerry's father would sit on the patio and toss pennies at it, making wishes. She'd wanted Stacy to do it once, and he did because Jerry was his friend. But he felt dumb, and he made Jerry swear later he wouldn't tell a soul. Then in August, he'd had an idea. Mr. Neal was getting pretty good at pitching the coins in. He could even do it most times with his eyes closed. So one night, when they were supposed to have been over at Will's, they snuck through the hole in the hedge and moved the well over. Just a few inches, not enough to notice. Mr. Neal missed, moved his chair, and recovered his aim. They moved the well again, back where it was, and sat on the other side of the hedge in Will's yard and laughed themselves into hiccups when they heard the guy swearing. They managed it twice more, until the night Jerry slipped on the damp grass and the well landed hard. One side cracked, a small split they didn't think anyone would notice. Mrs. Neal did, and that stupid Jerry broke the minute she asked him if they'd been fooling around. Stupid-ass Jerry. Him and his stupid-ass books and his posters, and not even knowing what Bernie looked like without her clothes. Damn, but they'd gotten into a hell of a lot of trouble. Especially when Stacy had let slip a fuck word when his mother grabbed for his arm. Christ, that had put him in his room for a whole goddamn week. The well, then. Jerry was still too scared to go near it and wouldn't dream that his old pal still had the nerve. He hurried off the patio onto the grass, crouched over and running on his toes, stopping once when lightning put a shadow in front of him, and it took him a moment to realize it was his own. A look back over his shoulder. The draperies were still closed, and he dove around the side of the well, out of the wind. Buried lightning again, and the mutter of thunder, and he whirled around when he thought he heard something coming through the hedge. Nothing. It was nothing. The leaves husked, and branches rattled, and grass crawled toward his legs, and all the houses he could see were perfectly dark, holes in the night, mouths of black monsters that ate people after sunset. Fuck, he said into the wind. It made him feel better, because the wind was getting on his nerves. Fuck, shit, damn, hell! He smiled and pulled the ruby out of his pocket, lifted his hand to drop it in the well when he stopped, frowned and wondered just how stupid dumb Jerry really was. He just might think of the well. He just might, if he looked inside with a flashlight, he'd see it right away and get all the chocolate. Worse, he'd brag about it to every kid in the school every day for a goddamn year. Worse yet, he He proved he was such a good little boy that his parents would lift the grounding and leave Stacy stuck in his room. What he had to do then was think like a robber, a crook, who was going to come back real soon and take the loot and run away once the cops had been by. He nodded to himself, looked back to the tool shed, and knew that was too obvious. If he was going to hide out here, then he would have to put it in the well, but cover it with something. Grass, maybe some dirt, so the light wouldn't shine off it. Suddenly, lightning sheared out of the clouds, ripping a hole in the night like a sheet tearing in half. He jumped and clutched the jewel to his stomach, closed his eyes, and waited for the thunder. When it came, cracking the air and smashing over his head, his ears stopped, and he yelled, jumped to his feet, and stared wide-eyed at the house. This was nuts. He was going to fry out here, all for a stupid piece of chocolate. Then he put a hand on the plaster lip and looked into the well and blinked. The edge only came to his waist, but it looked like it dropped 100 miles into the ground, maybe even 1,000,000. Mr. Neal must have dug a hole under it to pretend it was real and keep them from playing their trick on him again. He smiled. It was perfect, and he leaned over, reached out his hand, and when lightning flared again, he could see all the way to the bottom, to the grass, to the lousy damn grass. "Oh, shit," he said. Without wasting any more time, he hitched himself onto the lip and dropped in. The wind passing over the mouth sounded like hollow trumpets, and the sides quivered, and the peak roof shook, and the plastic bucket on the chain rocked alarmingly fast. It was a tight fit, but he had plenty of room to dig a small hole between his shoes with his fingers, placed the jewel carefully inside, and covered again. Then he waited for the next bolt to be sure his work couldn't be seen. When it came, he saw the water and couldn't stop himself from falling towards the red eyes floating towards him. This isn't funny anymore, Jeremy thought, but he didn't have the nerve to leave the deacon's bench and complain. Bernie was in the kitchen again, making something on the stove, rattling pans and banging spoons and whistling so far off key the noises scraped his spine like claws on a blackboard. This isn't fun. He looked over his shoulder out the window to the yard that flicked in and out of his vision, white, black, white again, and jumping over the well in the center. He had thoughts a few minutes ago that he'd seen Stacy creeping around there, but when the lightning came again and there was nothing to see, he changed his mind. Stacy was crazy, but not crazy enough for that. His tongue touched his upper lip. His left foot tapped on the floor. He looked to the stairwell when he thought he heard Will, then looked to the back door when he thought he heard Stace. Then the kitchen door slammed open and Bernie walked in. He blinked and tried to smile, but there was an ice cube settling on the back of his neck, and it grew when he heard the first spattering of rain on the window. Bernie sat in his father's chair by the fireplace and looked at the charred logs, raised her head and smiled straight at him. Her face was in partial shadow, and he could see only one eye, only one part of the mouth, only a few of her teeth. "Are you worried about your friends?" He nodded and swallowed because, he thought, he was going to break down and cry, and that was the one thing he'd promised himself he'd never do again. All it ever did was get a slap from his father or a shout from his mother. "Act your age, Jeremy Neal. You're not a baby anymore." "I wouldn't," she whispered. "They're doing just fine." "How do you know?" he asked, more angrily than he intended. "All you do is make that stupid popcorn. Will is hurt somewhere. I just know it. And Stacy must be out there in all that rain." He rose and stood in front of her, hands clenched at his sides, fighting the burning that flushed his cheeks. "You don't care. You just want to get us in trouble again. That's all. Our folks are going to come home, and we're going to get in the biggest trouble in the world." Bernie clasped her hands in her lap and watched the logs again as if they were burning. "Jeremy, do you know what bog butter is?" He frowned, looked away, and looked back. "What?" "It's our game, Jeremy. Surely you haven't forgotten the third game. Now answer my question. Have you ever heard of bog butter?" He felt a tear in his right eye, a lump of coal in his throat. "Huh?" She smiled dreamily and sighed. "In the old days, long before there was even a United States, they used to bury people in marshes over in England. You know what a marsh is?" He nodded. The rain slapped at the pane, ran over the edge of the gutter, and poured into the shrubs, cringing under the window. Well, sometimes when they dug these people up, they found that the bodies had oozed a kind of wax over themselves. It looked a little like butter, I guess, so they called it bog butter.
That's nice, he said, knowing it sounded stupid, but what else could he say? His friends were lost in the storm and in the house, and Bernie was sitting in his father's chair talking about dead bodies and butter and God. He'd wish she'd shut up so he could talk to her.
At the time, of course, they didn't know what has caused it or why it was there. He edged away, his head ducking, his lips turning before he did. And when she didn't seem to notice, he backed up to the staircase, then flung himself up, racing down the hall to his room on the far end. He checked under the bed, in his closet, under his desk, and in the toy chest. He looked out the window and saw nothing but the rain. He ducked into his parents' room and looked in everything that could have held Will and everything that couldn't, not caring that they'd find out when they saw the mess he made. The guest room was just as empty. Will? The bathroom echoed thunder. Will! He was sweating now, and he couldn't stop his fingers from snapping, couldn't stop his lips from moving as if he were talking to himself. He checked the hot closet, but it was locked. He shook the door as hard as he could, then turned the bolt over and reached in for the string that snapped on the light. Something fell against his leg, and he jumped back, yelping, then scowling, at an empty shoebox that had dropped from the high shelf. When he turned the light on, he saw nothing, not even when he crammed himself in and pushed everything aside that could move, or kick or butt with his hips. Will wasn't there. He stood in the middle of the hall, turning in a tight circle and yanking his head away from the lightning. Will, where are you? In the bathroom, a faucet began dripping. Will! Downstairs then, into the living room, the dining room, the coat closet, the pantry. He raced through the den and heard Bernadette still talking about corpses in old England. He flung open the front door and stood in the rain, not caring how wet he was getting, just hoping to catch a glimpse of Stacy returning with fat Will in tow. He ran around the house and screamed over the storm into the shrubbery, into the garage, into hedging that whipped at his arms and drew blood on his cheek. Stacy! A cry more than a shout. Will! Begging more than demanding. There was no one in the tool shed, no one in the well. He plunged back inside and stood by the table. Bernie! She sighed, lightning flared, and the lamp flickered out. Bernie, answer me! He swung his arm and knocked over the bowl of popcorn. He kicked the table's near leg and toppled the glasses of soda. He picked up a chocolate bar and flung it at the hearth. Bernie, damn it! Now that, she said, is one of the things your father objects to, that kind of language. But, and not paying attention, he said, they all said, none of you pay the slightest attention to them. She turned her head. He could see it moving, though he couldn't see her eyes. I could see that the first time I came here, and I could see something else, something rather sad when you think about it a bit. He shook his head and felt the water scattering across the room. I don't give a damn about them now, he said, grabbing the card table by its edge and tipping it to the floor. I want to know what you did with Will and Stacy. You see, Jeremy, there are some people who just aren't cut out to be parents. They haven't the innate skills or the temperament for it. Soon enough, they learn that children aren't pets. They're real human beings. And that's quite a revelation, don't you think, that children are human beings? He started to cry. He couldn't help it. Frustration at her refusal to respond made him so angry he couldn't stop the tears or the way his legs stiffened as he kicked aside the wreckage and started to walk towards her. You, of course, didn't help very much, she said in light scolding. Bernie, please! So your father found someone who knew me, and I came to help them get over their problem. He stopped. He could hear the soft whisper of Bernie's dress as she pushed out of the chair. He could hear the moist rattling of her breath in her throat. He could hear the odd way her feet struck the carpet as she walked over to meet him. Now, do you remember what I said about bog butter, Jeremy? He took a deep breath, closed his eyes, and screamed, I don't care! Oh, but you should, dear, you should. There was lightning, and he gasped. They thought, you see, it was a curious little byproduct of decomposition. There was thunder, and the lamp flickered. "It isn't, you know." The lamp steadied, and he saw her soft silken dress and her soft silken hair and the glistening yellow wax that covered her soft silken arms. "It's protection, my love." He backed away and screamed. The lamp sizzled and went out. "It keeps us alive, so we can help those who need us." She laughed then and moved closer. "Now, what are you afraid of, dear Jeremy, my love? Why don't you tell me so I can show you what it's like?"